Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview and promote people who are making a positive difference in this world. My name's Tom Tutal Cunningham. I'm a motivational speaker helping people to live positively with and through the many and varied challenges of life. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toe since the age of 5. That's 45 years now, and in that time I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1", hence the nickname Too Tall, and that's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. Despite those physical challenges, I'm well known for always answering amazing when asked how I'm doing. I tell people 80% of the time it's true. The other 20% of the time it's to remind myself that it's true. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and Tall, TALL.com. My guest today is Lisa Manioki. She is an impression management expert. She has a comprehensive understanding of people, interpersonal dynamics, motivation, impression development, expression management, and business. She cannot resist the chance to help professionals figure out what they want to do, get where they want to go, and keep on keeping on when change is uncomfortable. Lisa is a career entrepreneur who blends aspects of marketing and neuroscience with enthusiastic business smarts to help professionals identify what makes them tick, make good use of their best assets and strengths, develop their personal brand, make great impressions, become excellent, deliver excellence, get remembered, and shape lives in important ways, including their own. Welcome to the show today, Lisa.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be here. I appreciate your inviting me.
I love this topic. I just posted today that StrengthFinders 2.0 was the number one best-selling book on Amazon in 2013, which I love. I've also done Sally Hogshead Fascination Advantage Report and a number of other things that really help me identify my skills and talents. And is that the start of impression management and what you do is helping people know what their skills and talents are? Because I think if you identify those, that helps you make a better impression if you're working and teaching and writing and using those skills and talents, right?
No question about it. The first place to start with understanding who you are. And the recipe for you is different from the recipe for me and the next guy and the next gal. So it changes. And the only way we can understand who we are and what we put out there is understanding what makes us who we are and what our message is. So those assessments that you've discussed, that you've listed, I've done Sally Hogshead Fascinate Profile. I know I came up as the advocate, which is really right spot on. You took it, right? What were you?
I took it as well. I'm the change agent. The first one is power, and the second one is rebellion, my two traits that fascinate people. And so what is with yours? What is the advocate? What are the two strengths or things that fascinate other people about you?
Mine were passion and power.
Ah.
They were so correct, because when I get on a track and it's important to me, you'll know it. And then with the ability to communicate it clearly, you'll know I'm in the room. But it's not power in the power-hungry, authoritarian, got to be in control. There's a difference in types of power. This one I would regard, as it applies to myself, as more about charisma and impact. I love that assessment. That was a great one.
It was a great one. It was a great one. Now, Lisa, I'm thinking of what exactly is impression management? Because not everybody really knows what impression management is. And it affects so many things. When you meet someone in person, you have an impression. When someone reads about you online, they form an impression of you. And so talk about impression management, because it can make or break a person and their career and whatever they're trying to do, can it?
It sure can. Well, I'd say formally speaking, it's the art and the science of managing what you put out there, whether we're talking about appearance or language or behavior. All three of those combined make a specific impression. It can be a conscious process where we can say, okay, I need to get this job, so I'm going to make sure that I wear a nice suit and my hair is properly trimmed, or if it's not a suit-worthy environment, I'm going to wear the kind of attire that will enable me to fit in, whether it's holy jeans or a great tattoo, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So it's
exactly
a process
different
of,
environment.
Sure, sure. I remember one time there was this gentleman, a marvelous suit, and I could see peeking out the corner of his neckline a tattoo. Of course, I was intrigued, and I thought it was funny, but he was trying his darndest to keep it covered up. But it couldn't. There's no amount of clothing that could cover this thing up. So there was a little information in that, but he tried to, in a corporate environment, dress the part that enabled him to fit in correctly and to move him forward for that set of circumstances. However, I assure you, after getting to know him in his personal time, that suit was in the closet and stayed there. So all these things together, the appearance, your language, your behavior, they make an impression, and hopefully it's the one you want it to make. If not, you need to tweak the recipe.
Exactly, exactly. And an important thing, especially, is in person, first impressions. And I have a friend, Shannon Smith. She's the author of Power Manners. And I remember 20-some years ago when I was young, I paid someone, an image consultant, to show me what clothes to buy, what clothes
mm-hmm.
to wear, you know, what looked good on me, what doesn't necessarily look good on someone else. But I wanted to make a good first impression. And so I'm finding as well, Lisa, maybe younger people, younger generation, they may not have the same manners and may not have had the same upbringing as us older people. And so talk about first impressions, how important they are, manners. Manners go a long way. And so talk about those kind of things, a first impression in person. What are some of the things that make an impression when you're meeting someone in person?
Eye contact is huge. Huge. And unfortunately, the culture of text, especially in our young population, is starting to change the comfort level with looking at someone in the eye and having a conversation that's direct. I am not saying that text is a bad thing or that email is a bad thing. It's become an essential communication tool. However, it will never replace a one-on-one conversation. So there's no way you're going to engage a party in the same way looking down at a telephone or a keyboard as compared to when you're sitting across the table looking into a pair of eyes, right?
Exactly. You can tell a lot by looking into a person's eyes. And something recently my wife gave me heck for that I often will, in my office when she visits me here at home, be typing away and looking at my computer while I'm talking to her. It's not a good impression. It doesn't make
definitely
people valued.
Not at all. Or how about this? You make a business call, and you get an email back in 5 seconds. So that person was there, and yet they chose to respond via email and print instead of getting on the phone and having a conversation, which would likely answer the question or resolve whatever issue was relevant much more efficiently. So this written word communication is most assuredly becoming far more pervasive in not only young circles, but also in adult ones as well. It's important that we remember that the human contact of an in-person dialogue or, again, touching an arm or just the energy of the presence of another person cannot be simulated in kind in print. So don't let it fall totally to the wayside.
I love it, and I just finished reading a book called The Happiness Advantage, kind of another book on positive psychology, and it talks about just that. It says that every interaction you have, personal interaction during the day, brings up your happiness level, and yet at times of stress, people tend to withdraw, shut their office door, not go chat with people, not, you know, chat over the water cooler like they used to. And yet that is what throughout a day is going to give you that spark, that positivity, that happiness, people, in contact with people, one-on-one, not emails, not texts, but actual physical contact, talking to people, as you said, touching them, talking, touch them on the arm, talk to them, spend time. And boy, that is a very still, in today's day and age, the best way to make an impression, to get a message across. Now, for people who are wondering, is there a surefire way to make a good impression, and what are some surefire ways to make a bad impression?
Well, good and bad is all relative. I try when I'm working with people to not decide whether an impression they wish to make is necessarily good or bad. It's an impression. So sometimes what one person might regard a great impression, another might regard as rebellious or defiant. So it's important to determine, what are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to buck a system or a trend and make a statement, or are you trying to comply or to move through a corporate ladder gracefully so that you can lead a group of people? So very, very important for making any impression is to understanding first who you are and how you come across, but also what you wish to achieve. Because if you want to be remembered, hopefully for something great or something momentous, well, then you need to conduct yourself in a way that will enable that to come about so that you are remembered.
Exactly. And it would be good to even think of these things about impression management before you come into the situation, I imagine. And again, this is things like, well, how should I dress for this occasion? What are some positive words? But I would think that you can't just do it on the fly to make a good impression. If it's important for you to make a good impression, I think you have to pre-plan it, wouldn't you?
You do. In fact, part of the process of identifying what's the best impression for you to make, depending on the circumstances, is to experiment. So sometimes I'll say, okay, I want you to go into a networking group, and I want you to say you're a something, and choose a title. Then the following week, go to a different group and say you're something else. And I've done this. So I've been part of organizations or events where I've introduced myself as an impression management consultant. That always starts a conversation because we all know what an impression is. If I call myself a branding expert, it's a different conversation. If I say I'm a neuroscience coach, oh, well, that's totally different. So just experiment with the title and introduce yourself in different ways, and then observe the results. And then see which one feels more comfortable. Is it fitting you like a glove, or does it have a little trouble getting stuck in your throat? And when you're comfortable, then practice it. Practice it and make it so that it rolls off your mouth like butter on a hot knife, is what I say. Should be no thought to it.
Nice. I love it. Now, you've mentioned neuroscience, one of my favorite topics. tell our listeners about neuroscience and some of the things it's revealing. It's an amazing study, this Happiness Advantage book I read, as well as Positivity by Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, deal a lot in neuroscience, and it's proving what people like Napoleon Hill talked about before, about having a positive mental attitude and what it can do for you. So explain neuroscience and how exciting and fascinating it is and some of the things it's showing us.
Well, neuroscience is a really up-and-coming field. It's always been there, but it's starting to get some real traction, not only in marketing circles, but in performance circles as well. Look, we are energy. What we think puts out energy. Think about the person who walks into a room and everybody says, oh my gosh, I'm so glad she's here. Or the employer who walks into the office and everybody hunches over in their cubbies and said, uh-oh, he's here. You know, what we put out there in that way and how we conduct ourselves without even saying a word, so just from an energy perspective, can affect the results of our environment. So is it working for us? We need to know that. I knew one gal, she two professionals in the same position. The one woman was dynamite attractive. She was an older gal, and she, her suit always matched her purse, and her shoes always matched her, the collar of her jacket. I mean, wonderfully coiffed. But when she got up into a room to lead a discussion group, I'm telling you, if the crowd had popcorn, they'd throw it. Oppositely, another gentleman, again, same credentials, he walked into that room, and people immediately went to their chairs without being told. Nobody had to clap hands or tap a podium and say, okay, we're about to begin. They just sat. So what did those two people do differently that engaged the crowd in a way that caught attention? This is neuroscience. Our brain and how we command ourselves, our posture, the vibe we put out there will affect, for better or worse, the results of our environment.
Exactly. And so that brings up something that it's a total impression, not just because some people are like dressed for success, but like that woman, if you're good looking and dressed for success but don't have all the other things needed for a good impression, I think the person themselves needs to make the good impression. The clothes help. But you need to overall make a good impression, and clothes alone don't do it.
No, we can't package up incompetence. We can't dress it up. It's window dressing. I like to tell a story of the box of chocolates. We get this one beautiful box that's wrapped magnificently with a silver bow, and we open it up, though, and inside is chocolate that obviously had seen some heat. And the contents are lumpy and maybe coated with that horrible white coating when chocolate doesn't look so good anymore, and maybe they're clumped to the side of a box. Ultimately, when the outside attempts to camouflage insides that are problematic, well, we risk resentment from those who are trying to engage, and even disappointment, which is a bad, bad scenario.
Exactly. And is there, do first impressions matter that much? People talk about them all the time. First impression, make a good first impression. Does it matter that much? And once someone makes a first impression of you, is it hard to change that?
No, of course not. We're not bound by that. But here's the part about first impressions changing that people need to understand. It's contingent upon the willingness of the receiver of that impression to accept change. Let's say, for example, you're a speaker. You're not well practiced and you're just getting started. In the beginning of your speaking career, you may come off as a first time, I call it the first time fumble, where you just are a pasty mouthed or having some challenges recalling words, or maybe your posture's stiff. But with practice and maybe some training, maybe a year from then you come up to that stage and you're charismatic and charming and funny. So, yeah, there's room to regroup. But if we enter a room and let's say we have some mitigating factors like maybe fatigue or personal distraction or loss, we could put something out there that was really circumstantial and had nothing to do with us as a person. And we can apologize it away later or pull somebody aside or talk to our group and say, I'm really sorry, I wasn't equipped to deliver or to address such and such in a better way, but here's what had happened. And I do encourage people to lay it out there and be very candid. But we need to understand that in order for that impression to, or the second impression, to be well received, the other party needs to say, okay, sure, we get that. And we're willing to take a second look here. But if the recipient of that impression has decided, nope, I'm going to be inflexible here, I didn't like what I saw, thank you, no thank you, go away, well, then it doesn't matter. Then move on. Move on. No reason to keep beating the dead horse.
I love it. Lisa, I've studied a fair bit on body language. Janine Drivers, you say more than you think. There was a FBI, former FBI guy. Let me look at the
Oh, that's Joe Navarro,
body,
what everybody is
Joe
saying.
Joe Navarro.
Yeah, the power of body language. First of all, we should know these things ourselves so that our posture and our body language tells people what we're trying, the impression we're trying to make, right? But also, if you learn these subtle things, it's important to learn those to see what other people are saying without their words, what they're saying behind their words. And so talk about body language, our own, because if we have good body language, it activates our brain, as you know from neuroscience, makes us feel better, more confident, and then it gives a good impression. And then also, if you know how to read body language, you can look around a room and see how how what you are saying is coming across, or how people are viewing you, or even viewing anyone who's speaking. So talk about that, the importance, because I believe it's so important, and people say a lot with their body, and sometimes what they say with their body is reverse of what they're saying with their words.
And then we have our box of chocolates. The tainted box, yes. If someone, if we have a speaker up there in front of a crowd, and this is not just relevant to speakers, it could be to anybody, it could be to singles on a date. If you're open and if you're casual and relaxed, your posture will be very different than if you're uptight. How you cross your ankles, do you cross your ankles? Do you cross your leg? Do you clasp your hands? I mean, there's a lot of theory about this, but there are certain tells, like as in poker, when a certain gesture indicates what's in your hand. Same thing with body language. I mean, how you stand, how do you slump? Are you open-chested? These are basics, though, that no one really needs a book to study. The nuances of behavior are covered in these books, and they're really fascinating for those who are interested. But just in general, if someone can't look you in the eye, it kind of raises the eyebrow that, maybe there's something not quite right here. Maybe there's some element of deception. So use a judgment at a minimum and question things that appear questionable, right?
Nice. Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these things depend on what's the person's general posture, because you can't look at someone for 5 minutes and say, that person is not listening to me, they're not interested in my presentation, unless you know that this is different than how they usually hold their body. And so those are always good to, you can't always judge it on, you know, seeing someone for 5 or 10 minutes. There are some telltale ones, as you know, as you said, like poker, telltale signs of people's, that their body language gives off. But you really do have to know the person well to really for sure say, they're holding themselves a bit different today, or they're standing a bit different, or they look a little tired.
Right.
And so it's good to know. It's not a 100% science, but when you do know it, it does really help you with your own personal body language, and also helps you to perceive how you may be being taken by other people, or whoever's speaking, if people, you can look around and say, he's being well-regarded or not regarded. And so important to look at that body language. Now, Lisa, with these discussions about impression management, people might think, well, that's for C-level executives leading, you know, thousands of people, where everything they do is looked at and read and reviewed and discussed and debated. But I'm thinking, like a lot of my audience is self-employed people, network marketers, entrepreneurs, and so in my opinion, impression management is for everybody in any business of any type, even if you're self-employed, network marketer, entrepreneur. Impression management is so important, what the impression you make in person, but also online. Talk about that, because that's where most people get most of their information and knowledge these days, is the Internet. So talk about who needs impression management. Is it just a C-level executive leading thousands of people? And talk about impression management as well for online, because you see a lot of people on Facebook and other social media platforms doing dumb things that don't leave a good impression.
Yes. Well, first, to answer your question, everybody can use it at some point. Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
From a young student in the classroom, I mean, think about an impression a student makes. If he's slouched back sleeping through class every day, well, there's something going on there. And how is the teacher going to respond to that child who does not appear invested in the classroom? So it would be great for students.
Yeah.
It would be great for teachers. Are you the teacher that says, you're willful, or you're belligerent, when in fact it just might be a kid who's energetic? So a teacher then assigns certain rules to the classroom. Are they that strict teacher that we don't want to mess with him because he's where the penalty for misbehaving or for not doing something is going to be really stiff? Or are we going to be an approachable teacher who says, okay, talk to me. You're having a problem. I want you to see me after school, or pull the person aside. So it could be for teachers. It can be certainly for speakers. And when your audience is texting through your chat or sleeping, it is time to change direction for sure. And I have seen that happen, not with myself, but I observed a woman actually conducting a fairly intimate meeting. And within 15 minutes, participants at that meeting were taking notes, doodling. That's not a good sign. You are not capturing attention, and you must. So for sure, anybody who needs to engage or to accomplish or something or have some impact, including parents, it's not just about professionals. I mean, how do we want our kids to respond to us? What are we telling them about ourselves? Very, very important.
Very important, very important. And I hadn't thought about this student one, but this could mean grades. This could mean grades. If you're sitting up, paying attention, participating, polite, all things that maybe a teacher would look for, most likely, because people are human and they grade based on, a lot of times, I would assume, who they like. And so if you have that body posture in class, we are ideally probably talking about a higher grade than someone who just slumps, shows up on time or late, doesn't participate.
Sure.
And so this could mean real-life better grades. And so I hadn't even thought of the student, but how important is that? That's so important. But then even people like network marketing people, a lot of those around, and, you know, they can create favorable or unfavorable impressions. Who wants to join some? Yeah, online, like if they're, you know, talking poorly about some politician and bashing, probably 50% of people are thinking poorly of you. And, you know, why do you share those things publicly? So talk about online impression management, because people do silly things that they have no idea people are looking and reading and thinking, I really don't want much to do with this person.
Everything that gets put into print or out there has a long, long shelf life. I like to remind people that once you hit send or okay or go, guess what? You're in trouble if you want to retrieve it, because some politician may regret very much so information they put out there, or some student may say, oh my gosh, I wish I didn't put all that gossipy thing on my Facebook page or my LinkedIn profile. It's a problem. So I always remind people that if you're willing to put it into print, you better be willing to say it to someone's face or have someone read it, and sometimes to be comfortable with saying that to a judge in a courtroom, because that can happen too. I know in marital litigation, lawyers will say, please, client, do not send a long string of nasty emails, because I can't tell you how many motions I get where email correspondences that are quite scathing and very unflattering are attached. You put out there in print lasts a very long time.
Very long time. And my wife is a paralegal for a criminal lawyer who specializes in criminal defense and family law. And so many times the court order will be no contact. And then so many times you see them send some nasty, horrible text, and then they've breached their conditions of whatever, and it counts against them, and it costs them. Boy, you know, people...
And that makes an impression.
It makes an impression.
It sure does. If it can be perceived by those that don't know the whole story as inflammatory, even if it may seem warranted. So, you see, sometimes a person, like here's an instance where impression management can be destructive. If someone goads another party into issuing commentary or writing such a correspondence and only pushes the button but then doesn't play the game, they basically instigate behavior. So that's a little warped. You know, then they've started a chain of reaction and they gotcha. But if you're the only one that put inflammatory things in print when it needs to be evaluated by someone else in a position of authority, you could look like the troublemaker when in fact you're not. So in certain instances, it is crucial to regulate what comes out of your mouth and onto your keyboard and onto your telephone. Crucial.
Mm. Very crucial. Think numerous times before sending anything that could be perceived poorly.
Sure. And how do you do that? If you can't regulate it yourself, then get in the way that Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a sponsor. Find yourself a communication sponsor. So if you're in the thick of an emotionally charged experience, such as divorce or anything litigious, of course, just have somebody who was willing to read what you've written and make certain that there's nothing in there that's going to come back to haunt you later. You just don't want to do that. Same thing for athletes. It's very important in athletes. The impression we make as an athlete can determine how much respect the fans have for you. It can determine how you're perceived by the opponent. Are you in their head? You know, I go into the locker room of youth, men's youth hockey here. The teenagers are a hoot. And I speak to them about some performance issue. And one of the things recently I addressed was, hey, kids, I know it's very common to chirp, and chirping is goading the opponent into getting all rattled and saying all crazy things. I said, I have a thing for you to try today. How about if you go out on that ice and you say nothing when the other team starts to irritate you? Oh, we can't do that. We can't do that. This is part of the game. I said, okay, get it. This is just one game. Give it a whirl. Because what happens when someone else doesn't engage? It's like the tug of war. You can only have a tug of war if both people hold the rope. So let go. They thought it was so funny because it frustrated the opponent. So it made a very different impression. They were going to play hockey. They were not going to play the mental game of intimidation. So it was a really cool experiment. So it's relevant to athletes as well.
Nice. Yes, yes. Very true. And parents, I would think, as well.
Yeah, sure. Are you
realize...
a screamer? You betcha.
Yeah.
Are you a screamer? Are you a spanker? Are you a punisher, or what are you? I mean, what are you?
Exactly, and so much of what you say and do is going to be copied. So many things have studies shown that if you're an alcoholic, you probably may have a higher tendency, if your parents are alcoholic, to be alcoholic. If they beat their kids, you will beat your kids. And so what impression are you making on your kids? And I don't know that people
last.
Always think about that, but everything they say and do for the first number of years is basically forming a ginormous impression that may never leave. And so,
now that's a good point you make, because I've studied at pretty comprehensively with Dr. David Kruger. He's the dean of curriculum for Coach Training Alliance, where I was became a certified coach. And he's a friend and a colleague, but he talks all about the patterning that goes on from our early formative years and the subconscious choices we make or the environment in which we've been raised that last an awful long time. We don't even know sometimes why we do things. And until we're either unhappy enough or need to make some kind of change, this is where neuroscience kicks in, because the ability to break a habit, and this habits may have been the source of, or the result, rather, of impressions that we've made or that others have imposed upon us. So it's very important to understand that we may be doing things or putting things out there we don't intend because we are actually responding to history. We always have the choice to change that. And it's not always easy. That's why when we talk about, oh gosh, I'm not getting the career that I want, or I'm not accomplishing the goals I seek. Well, let's take a look at what we could adjust to address that. And there's usually something fairly obvious, and then there's a lot of what's not so obvious that needs some little bit of digging and tweaking.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, is there any downside to impression management other than the time and thought processes it takes to pay attention to your impression you're making? What would be any downside to it?
Well, I'd say a con artist is a masterful impression manager, and it's not such a nice thing. There is some controversy. Some clinicians will say that impression management is tactical and a little controversial in that way. But look, when anyone is becoming manipulative with a poor or unkind motive, I'd say it's a problem, whether it's impression management or not. So, yes, if you're adapting an impression or becoming something to achieve an end that is unkind or undesirable or downright criminal, then there's certainly a problem with that. But I like to think of impression management as capitalizing on people's best assets, the traits and parts of their personality that where they're most at home, that have something great to contribute to their own life and to that of others because that's all theirs. And then just really making it terrific. Because I think when we do what we do best, and we all have something really important to contribute, every last one of us does, and maybe some of us are intended to speak on a more wide-scale message, and maybe others of us are just meant to fly under the radar and be wonderful people at a different scale in terms of impact. It doesn't matter. None of it's good or bad. All collectively, it makes this wonderful mosaic that we call humanity. So I like to think of finding each of our best strengths and then making them super terrific, getting us where we can go so we can affect change in our own lives, because then, just by virtue of being nearby others, it can infect others in the very best way.
Yes.
And I say infect very carefully. You know, catch it like a cold.
Yeah. This book, The Happiness Advantage, says it can affect people 3 degrees from you.
Sure.
So, you know, it can affect people around you, not just in close proximity, who you're with at the time, but the impression you make on the person you're with at the time will also impact 2 other layers of people beyond that, because
yes.
You impact them, they go out and impact someone else, and they go out and impact someone else, and so it's so crucial. And then I love what you said, that unfortunately a lot of these character development ideas and projects and plans, as you said, there's a lot of people who use them as tactics. If it's a tactic, it's not really yourself. So it's best if you're, you know, working on impression management to be yourself. You can adapt new behaviors and new habits and all that, but in the end, I was going to say most people can tell when someone's using it as a tactic, but unfortunately, most people can't tell because, you know, there are crooks, bad people, con men, liars, and, you know, they're using tactics so that you think they're a great person, but in the end...
Right, but those charades typically catch up with people. You know, each of us has the core of who we are. And, yes, a well-practiced felon can pull that off for a while. But the amount of energy it takes to defy our nature can be exhausting. So that's why I like, instead, to focus on what comes most naturally. Are you, by nature, a quiet personality who likes to be more the stage crew, or are you a dynamic powerhouse who is best served and serving others on the stage? There's room for both parties, and collectively they make for a great show. So I find those traits and those inclinations are the best place to start. And sure, can we polish some of those skills where we're not ideally really skilled? Yes, we can. But I prefer and recommend to start from a place of strength, because that's where you'll be excelling the best and the most, because it's you.
It's, yeah, naturally who you are.
Sure.
Exactly. I remember a thing that Zig Ziglar said about looking people in the eye, and, you know, people will trust you, and they believe that if someone can't you look in the eye, you shouldn't trust them. But then he went on to say, not 100% proof of trustability if someone looks you in the eye, because he said, you know, the best con men in the world can look you dead set
you
in the eyes and tell you the biggest lie they've ever told.
But
as Zig said, if you don't look people in the eye, just there, people are built not to trust someone who will not look them in the eye.
Right.
But if they do, that doesn't mean that they're honest as the day is long. But if you don't people are not going to trust you.
No, but it does give people room for pause. I know there's a gentleman, lovely gentleman, whenever we'd speak, he looked over my shoulder. And I finally said to him, what are you looking at? Is there something better over there? And he used to say, oh, really, I'm sorry, but that's how I listen. This guy was just such the consummate listener that he devoted all of himself to his ear, and in doing so, turned his ear to the person, but tended to look left. So that was something we had to practice, simply because it wasn't that he was doing any disservice to those. In fact, he was listening very closely, but I said, you need to somehow figure that since your ear and your eye are only a few inches apart, you'll still hear them if you look at them. It took him some doing to do it, too. He pulled it off, though.
Wow. Cool story.
What's that?
That's a cool story.
Yeah, yeah. He was actually a nurse. He was a male nurse. And,
wow.
So he was in the business of listening and taking care, but he also learned that when he looked at people, it added another layer of warmth to the process, and it ended up doing great things for him interpersonally in his career.
And my favorite people in the world are nurses. Imagine being in the hospital 40 times. That's who I see most of as nurses. And, boy, they can make a huge impression, too.
You betcha they can.
When I leave hospital, I remember and talk about the great nurses, and then I also remember and talk about the bad coaches. Or the bad nurses, the bad impressions. And so so important for anyone, even, like as you said, nurses is so important, because they their attitude, their impression, they make an impression, and they, you know, make a big impression on people sick. So excellent example of someone who needs to look at impression. You also do so many things, Lisa. You have so many certifications. DISC, I love DISC, behavior analysts,
yep.
And DISC helps. Explain DISC a little bit. I believe everybody, every salesperson, every employee, even personally, should do a DISC profile or some behavior analysis profile.
Yeah, DISC is one of the tools I use. In fact, when I engage with the clients, the first thing we do, take a DISC profile. And it's a personality assessment. It explains how we do what we do. It divides people into four categories, and we each have a certain measure of each. There's D for dominant, I for influence, S for steadfastness, and C for conscientious. And based on the type of graph that plots the results and the inclination in one category versus another, lend some insight to whether we're on the stage or in the background. You know, whether we're the quieter personality or the talkers, whether we're the leaders or whether we're the researchers. It's not good, bad, or indifferent. It's simply a measure of dimensions of personality based on behavior, and I have found it to be spot on every time.
It is
spot on.
And imagine if you're in a company, if you had everyone do a DISC analysis so you know what their personality, their tendencies, what they're good at, what they're not good at. Boy, I think it would be so valuable. When I used to hire salespeople, I would make sure that they took it so that I would know how to manage them. And so
there are some organizations who actually put the result on the outside of offices. So after an entire group has trained, there's a little color for each of your indicators. Are you a high D or a high I or whatever? And so you know if you're coming in, and remember when I talked before, you have to about understanding your audience. If I'm coming to Greece, I'm not going to talk Italian. The same for when you're engaging in a conversation with another colleague or a professional or a client, whatever. You need to understand how they need to hear information and, therefore, adjust the way you deliver it so you are heard. Right?
Exactly.
So they would put a little little color code on the door and say, oh, this is a high I. Make sure I ask him how his kids are doing or where he went on vacation. But if it's not a high I, let's say it's a high D, say, okay, did we get the deadline met? Are we done? Are we done first? And then we can chit-chat. So anyone who's interested can certainly Google DISC, a DISC assessment or profile, and read about it. But yes, I became a trainer because I felt that it was a very, very smart tool for starting to understand what makes someone tick. And I use it all the time.
And you also do something kind of interesting that I've spoken to other people who do it. You have something called Maverick Inspired for divorcing breadwinners. Talk about that, because as I mentioned, with my wife working for a family law lawyer, I encounter these marriage breakdown stories and divorce stories every day.
Right.
A lot of them are brutally bad.
Well, mine was, I'm divorced. It was an ugly divorce. It was a really nasty process that I hated, and I wouldn't want to go through it again. And yet, I wouldn't trade the results for the world. So I learned some pretty harsh lessons first a long time ago, and I really felt that if I could give some tips to those who are enduring the process, especially as breadwinners, because in my case I was, there are very specific conditions that become relevant to the higher earner. And it implies certain responsibilities and other stressors that the lower earner does not ever have to endure. And it requires very specific behavior during negotiations, if there's any court and whatnot, that you have to watch yourself because you are typically vulnerable to the other party exercising some financial options they otherwise would not, if you kept inflammation and aggravation at a minimum. So it's just a fight with some tips.
I can guarantee that. And this is when you're going through a divorce, impression management and managing your words and behaviors is unbelievably important. And if you don't do it, it really will cost you money. I know real life examples. So that must be a kind of a unique calling for you, because there are many people in that position, and it is the most horrible thing most people go through. But if they do it properly in the end, it is ends up kind of being the best thing they did too, like you. So important. And I'm going to put all these websites on the page that I'm creating. Thank you so much for your time today, Lisa. I really appreciate it. I see that your call dropped, and so we'll finish this interview. And thank you so much for your time.